that song wasn't a single, but you couldn't turn your radio down. Satellite need a receiver, can't seem to turn the signal fully off. Transmitting the wave, you're catching that breeze till you're dead in the grave.
But you're keeping it so real.
Whatever you like, whatever feels good, whatever takes your mountain high. It's real, not sugar free. My TV ain't HD, that's too rare. Grapevines, mango, peaches, and lime, a sweet life.
All right, so we just heard No Rain by Blind Melon. And this is Husk Cherries. This is our third show of the season. Yeah, and this is 91.5 WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. One second.
I can't hear anything. I'm just... Yeah, so welcome back to... All right, so you just heard No Rain. This is Husk Cherries back at it again. You are listening to WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
Yeah, back welcome. With a cough. It's great. Yay.
It's that time of year.
Mm-hmm. And we played No Rain because actually, like, a week ago, we had this idea of playing, like, a song game. And you sing a song, or as a team, you sing a bunch of songs that follow a certain theme, and we just rattled off some rain theme games, or songs. Yeah. And up next we have Man Wolves.
Yeah, we actually saw them live, was it last week or a few weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
They came to Tufts for Apple Jam. They were really, really good.
Yeah.
It was like pretty great. Amazing live, really mm-hmm. cool, and yeah, they had really good sound. So we have some of them coming up for you. All right, without further ado, let's play some Man Wolves.
Do a 36, that 36, that fade away. Fade away, that fade away. Kobe with the fade away. I throw it back to 88. Them Jordan years at 23. 23, now I'm the boss. I ain't never lost. I'm going down a road for my own cause. My own cause. My own cause. Baby, don't be stressing, cause I don't want to hear loss. Do you really need it? I believe it. What you want, I got to give it. Do you need it? Cause I want it. Without that, I'm not leaving. I'm twisted, I'm falling. Trip like it's acid, but no drugs I don't need. Got no prescriptions, I'm failing, I saw it. Coming from miles away. If you're not about it, then we are torn today. On the highway, feeling so nostalgic. That throwback back in the day, those beach days. That summer, you on my side. In nice weather, I don't need no news. All I need is you. Rather go broke than to pay my dues. 45 at 45, 15 to midnight. Watching and listening, pitch black, alright. I need it, I need it. I am addicted, but no intervention. Cause I would deny it, like Zion, a lion. Lying about feelings, fucked up so I can just go and hide it. I'm sitting in the studio with Tulio, just trying to get to you, baby. But the song's so fucking dope that I'm trying to get to you, baby.
longer got my 808s. Fucked up the ground shakes. Upstate New York, Chicago to LA. Ball out, did it just for two. I'm saving this money, but we'll spend it for you. Get it fixed for the fist for five. Post up at least till nine. Got my huggy, my buddy, my druggie, my all mine. My all mine, my all right. Speaking up my own rhyme. Down on my luck, and it seems that it's all time. Then I see a light at the end of the tunnel. I ain't waiting, somebody just pass me a paddle. Paddle upstream. Upstream, stream this, groove this, listen, groove this. My sides are hurting from all this working, working like Shabba, Shabba like something, something like one drop that reggae connected like Bluetooth, Bluetooth like hands free. Yeah, I don't
cigarettes in the last seat. Trying to hide my sorrow from the people I meet and get along with it all. Go down when people say y'all, sing a song with a friend, change the shape that I'm in, and get back in the game, start playing again. I'd like to stay, but I might have to go to start over again. Might go back down to Texas, or might go to somewhere that I've never been. And get up in the morning and go out at night, and I won't have to go home. Get used to being alone, change the words to the song, and start singing again. For answers to questions that I already know. I could build me a castle of memories just to have somewhere to go. Count the days and the nights that it takes to get back in the saddle again. Feed the pigeons some clay, turn the night into day, and start talking again when I know what to say. Sorrow from the people I meet and get along with it all. Go down where people say y'all, feed the pigeons and play, turn the night into day, and start talking again when I know what to say.
So, you just heard Clay Pigeons, and yeah, apparently a movie came out about the original artist of this song. I'm
Graves.
Forgetting his name.
Something Graves.
Yeah.
But the
Blaze
movie.
Blaze Foley, that's who it is. Yeah, and it got really good reviews.
Oh, yeah.
It was directed by Ethan Hawke. I really want to see it. But yeah. It's a really chill song.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Cera covered it.
And before that, we had the Dodos with Walking. Yeah, also a really great song. They have a very cute little album cover that seems hand-drawn. and we also have a PSA announcement. This is a local farmers market's PSA to kind of help us recuperate from all that sugary consumption from Halloween.
Yeah, it's time to be healthy again.
Yeah. Throughout the summer and early autumn, there are a number of local farmers markets where you can buy fresh Massachusetts-grown vegetables, fruits, berries, herbs, flowers, honey, and even baked goods. The Medford Farmers Market takes place every Thursday from 3 to 7 p.m. in the Condon Shell on Mystic Valley Parkway in Medford, with free parking in the lot there as well as on both sides of Winthrop and South Streets.
The Somerville Davis Square Farmers Market is open Wednesdays from noon through 6 p.m. in the lot at day and Herbert Streets. On the other side of Somerville, Union Square hosts Farmers Market on Saturdays from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. right in Union Square Plaza. Cambridge, Arlington, Boston, and many other cities and towns have their own local markets as well. For more information, just fire up your favorite internet search engine and look for the farmers markets in your area. This has been a public service message from all the fruits and vegetables here at WMFO in Medford, Tufts Community Radio.
Cute. All right. So up next, we have some music that was queued up by our friend Ellie, who's in China right now.
Yeah.
And so we're just paying some tribute to Ellie right now.
Yeah, playing this in her honor.
Yeah.
Wish you could be here. Mm-hmm. We miss you.
I'll miss you, Ellie.
Even though she can't listen to this.
Yeah. Okay. But first up, we have a song by Neil Young.
Yeah, here we enjoy. Go.
Thank you. Dark, be the let me go, let me go, let me go.
So you just heard Wanderlust, not Wanderlust, Wanderlust, by Saint Seneca. And before that was Souls Like the Wheels by my absolute favorite, the Avett Brothers. Or Avett Brothers. I think it's Avett Brothers.
It is?
Yeah, I think that's how they say it themselves. So I should probably start pronouncing it.
This whole time. Wow.
I know.
Okay. So up next, since we thought it would be in the spirit of Halloween.
Since it's the day after Halloween, but I still have been seeing people walking around in costumes, so clearly it's still Halloween weekend a week later.
Yeah, I know. It's 2 weeks long this year, but...
Yeah.
Or 2 weekends long. We will be reading a short story because we just love to hear ourselves talk, I guess. But we'll be reading The Lottery by Shirley Jackson.
Yeah, I actually read this Halloween morning. Halloween morning. I think it was yesterday morning. In the spirit of Halloween.
We read this in middle school.
Yeah, I also did read it in middle school. But yes, would you like to start?
Okay. The Lottery by Shirley Jackson. The morning of June 27th was clear and sunny with the fresh warmth of a full summer day. The flowers were blossoming profusely and the grass was richly green. The people of the village began to gather in the square between the post office and the bank around 10 o'clock. In some towns, there were so many people that the lottery took 2 days and had to be started on June 2th? It says 2th on 2nd, but in this village, where there were only about 300 people, the whole lottery took less than 2 hours, so it could begin at 10 o'clock in the morning and still be through in time to allow the villagers to get home for noon dinner.
The children assembled first, of course. School was recently over for the summer, and the feeling of liberty sat uneasily on most of them. They tended to gather together quietly for a while before they broke into boisterous play, and their talk was still of the classroom and the teacher, of books and reprimands. Bobby Martin had already stuffed his pockets full of stones, and the other boys soon followed his example, selecting the smoothest and roundest stones. Bobby and Harry Jones and Dickie Delacroix, the villagers pronounced this name Delacroix, eventually made a great pile of stones in one corner of the square and guarded it against the raids of the other boys. The girls stood aside, talking amongst themselves, looking over their shoulders at rolled in the dust or clung to the hands of their older brothers or sisters.
Pardon me. Soon the men began to gather, surveying their own children, speaking of planting and rain, tractors and taxes. They stood together, away from the pile of stones in the corner, and their jokes were quiet, and they smiled rather than laughed. The women, wearing faded house dresses and sweaters, came shortly after their menfolk. They greeted one another and exchanged bits of gossip as they went to join their husbands. Soon the women, standing by their husbands, began to call to their children, and the children came reluctantly, having to be called 4 or 5 times. Bobby Martin ducked under his mother's grasping hand and ran, laughing back to the piles of stones. His father spoke up sharply, and Bobby came quickly and took his place between his father and his oldest brother.
The lottery was conducted, as were the square dances, the teen club, the Halloween program, by Mr. Summers, who had the time and energy to devote to civic activities. He was a round-faced, jovial man, and he ran the coal business, and people were sorry for him, because he had no children and his wife was a scold. When he arrived in the square, carrying the black wooden box, there was a murmur of conversation among the villagers, and he waved and called, "Little late today, folks." The postmaster, Mr. Graves, followed him, carrying a 3-legged stool, and the stool was put in the center of the square, and Mr. Summers set the black box down on it. The villagers kept their distance, leaving a space between themselves and the stool, and when Mr. Summers said, "Some of you fellows want to give me a hand?" there was a hesitation before two men, Mr. Martin and his oldest son, Baxter, came forward to hold the box steady on the stool while Mr. Summers stirred up the papers inside it.
The original paraphernalia for the lottery had been lost long ago, and the black box now resting on the stool had been put into use even before Old Man Warner, the oldest man in town, was born. Mr. Summers spoke frequently to the villagers about making a new box, but no one liked to upset even as much tradition as was represented by the black box. There was a story that the present box had been made with some pieces of the box that had preceded it, the one that had been constructed when the first people settled down to make a village here. Every year after the lottery, Mr. Summers began talking again about a new box, but every year the subject was allowed to fade off without anything being done. The black box grew shabbier each year. By now, it was no longer completely black, but splintered badly along one side to show the original wood color, and in some places faded or stained.
Mr. Martin and his oldest son, Baxter, held the black box securely on the stool until Mr. Summers had stirred the papers thoroughly with his hand. Because so much of the ritual had been forgotten or discarded, Mr. Summers had been successful in having slips of paper substituted for the chips of wood that had been used for generations. Chips of wood, Mr. Summers had argued, had been all very well when the village was tiny, but now that the population was more than 300 and likely to keep on growing, it was necessary to use something that would fit more easily into the black box. The night before the lottery, Mr. Summers and Mr. Graves made up the slips of paper and put them in the box, and it was then taken to the safe of Mr. Summers' coal company and locked up until Mr. Summers was ready to take it to the square next morning. The rest of the year, the box was put away, sometimes one place, sometimes another. It had spent 1 year in Mr. Graves' barn and another year underfoot in the post office, and sometimes it was set on a shelf in the Martin grocery and left there.
There was a great deal of fussing to be done before Mr. Summers declared the lottery open. There were the lists to make up of heads of families, heads of households in each family, members of each household in each family. There was the proper swearing in of Mr. Summers by the postmaster as the official of the lottery. At one time, some people remembered, there had been a recital of some sort performed by the official of the lottery, a perfunctory, tuneless, a perfunctory tuneless chant that had been rattled off duly each year. Some people believed that the official of the lottery used to stand just so when he said or sang it. Others believed that he was supposed to walk among the people. But years and years ago, this part of the ritual had been allowed to lapse. There had been also a ritual salute, which the official of the lottery had had to use in addressing each person who came up to draw from the box. But this also had changed with time. Until now, it was felt necessary only for the official to speak to each person approaching. Mr. Summers was very good at all this. In his clean white shirt and blue jeans, with one hand resting carelessly on the black box, he seemed very proper and important as he talked interminably to Mr. Graves and the Martins.
Just as Mr. Summers finally left off talking and turned to the assembled villagers, Mrs. Hutchinson came hurriedly along the path to the square, her sweater thrown over her shoulders, and slid into place in the back of the crowd. "Clean forgot what day it was," she said to Mrs. Delacroix, who stood next to her, and they both laughed softly. "Not thought my old man was out back stacking wood," Mrs. Hutchinson went on. "And then I looked out the window and the kids was gone, and then I remembered it was the 27th and came a-running." She dried her hands on her apron, and Mrs. Delacroix said, "You're in time, though. They're still talking away up there."
Mrs. Hutchinson craned her neck to see through the crowd and found her husband and children standing near the front. She tapped Mrs. Delacroix on the arm as a farewell and began to make her way through the crowd. The people separated good-humoredly to let her through. Two or three people said, in voices just loud enough to be heard across the crowd, "Here comes your Mrs. Hutchinson." And Bill, she made it after all. Mrs. Hutchinson reached her husband, and Mr. Summers, who had been waiting, said cheerfully, "Thought we were going to have to get on without you, Tessie." Mrs. Hutchinson said, grinning, Wouldn't have me leave my dishes in the sink now, would you, Joe?" And soft laughter ran through the crowd as the people stirred back into position after Mrs. Hutchinson's arrival.
"Well, now," Mr. Summers said soberly, "guess we better get started, get this over with, so's we can go back to work. Anybody ain't here?"
"Dunbar," said several people said. "Dunbar, Dunbar."
Mr. Summers consulted his list. "Clyde Dunbar," he said. "That's right. He broke his leg, hasn't he? Who's drawing for him?"
"Me, I guess," a woman said, and Mr. Summers turned to look at her. "Wife draws for her husband," Mr. Summers said. "Don't you have a grown boy to do it for you, Janie?" Although Mr. Summers and everyone else in the village knew the answer perfectly well, it was the business of the official of the lottery to ask such questions formally. Mr. Summers waited with an expression of polite interest while Mrs. Dunbar answered.
"Horace is not but 16 yet," Mrs. Dunbar said regretfully. "Guess I gotta fill in for the old man this year."
"Right," Mr. Summers said. He made a note on the list he was holding. Then he asked, "Watson boy drawing this year?"
A tall boy in the crowd raised his hand. "Here," he said, "I'm drawing for my mother and me." He blinked his eyes nervously and ducked his head as several voices in the crowd said things like, "Good fellow, Lack," and "Glad to see your mother's got a man to do it."
"Well," Mr. Summers said, "guess that's everyone. Old man Warner make it?"
"Here," a voice said, and Mr. Summers nodded.
A sudden hush fell on the crowd as Mr. Summers cleared his throat and looked at the list. "All ready?" he called. "Now, I'll read the names. Heads of families first, and the men come up to come up and take a paper out of the box. Keep the paper folded in your hand without looking at it until everyone has had a turn. Everything clear?"
The people had done it so many times that they only half listened to the directions. Most of them were quiet, wetting their lips, not looking around. Then Mr. Summers raised one hand high and said, "Adams." A man disengaged himself from the crowd and came forward. "Hi, Steve," Mr. Summers said, and Mr. Adams said, "Hi, Joe." They grinned at one another humorously and nervously. Then Mr. Adams reached into the black box and took out a folded paper. He held it firmly by one corner as he turned and went hastily back to his place in the crowd, where he stood a little apart from his family, not looking down at his hand.
"Allen," Mr. Summers said. "Anderson, Bentham."
"Seems like there's no time at all between lotteries anymore," Mrs. Delacroix said to Mrs. Greaves in the back row.
"Seems like we got through with the last one only last week."
"Time sure goes fast," Mrs. Graves said.
"Clark, Delacroix.
"There goes my old man," Mrs. Delacroix said. She held her breath while her husband went forward.
"Dunbar," Mr. Summers said, and Mrs. Dunbar went steadily to the box while one of the women said, "Go on, Janie," and another said, "There she goes."
"We're next," Mrs. Graves said. She watched while Mr. Graves came around from the side of the box, greeted Mr. Summers gravely, and selected a slip of paper from the box. By now, all through the crowd, there were men holding the small folded papers in their large hand, turning them over and over nervously. Mrs. Dunbar and her two sons stood together, Mrs. Dunbar holding the slip of paper.
"Harbert, Hutchinson."
"Get up there, Bill," Mrs. Hutchinson said, and the people near her laughed.
"Jones."
"They do say," Mr. Adams said to Old Man Warner, who stood next to him, "that over in the North Village, they're talking of giving up the lottery."
Old Man Warner snorted. "Pack of crazy fools," he said, "listening to the young folks. Nothing's good enough for them. Next thing you know, they'll be wanting to go back to living in caves. Nobody work anymore. Live that way for a while. Used to be a saying about lottery in June, corn be heavy soon. First thing you know, we'd all be eating stewed chickweed and acorns. There's always been a lottery," he added petulantly. "Bad enough to see young Joe Summers up there choking with everybody."
"Some places have already quit lotteries," Mrs. Adams said.
"Nothing but trouble in that," Old Man Warner said stoutly. "Pack of young fools."
Martin, and Bobby Martin watched his father go forward. Overdyke, Percy.
"I wish they'd hurry," Mrs. Dunbar said to her older son. "I wish they'd hurry."
"They're almost through," her son said.
"You get ready to tell Dad, Mrs. Dunbar said.
Mr. Summers called his own name and then stepped forward precisely and selected a slip from the box. Then he called Warner.
77th year, and I've been in the lottery," Old Man Warner said as he went through the crowd. 77th time.
Watson, the tall boy, came awkwardly through the crowd. Someone said, "Don't be nervous, Jack," and Mr. Summers said, "Take your time, son."
Zanini.
After that, there was a long pause, a breathless pause, until Mr. Summers, holding his slip of paper in the air, said, "All right, fellows." For a minute, no one moved, and then all the slips of paper were opened. Suddenly, all the women began to speak at once, saying, "Who is it? Who's got it? Is it the Dunbars? Is it the Watsons?" Then the voices began to say, "It's Hutchinson. It's Bill. Bill Hutchinson's got it."
"Go tell your father," Mrs. Dunbar said to her older son.
People began to look around to see the Hutchinsons. Bill Hutchinson was standing quiet, staring down at the paper in his hand. Suddenly, Tessie Hutchinson shouted to Mr. Summers, "You didn't give him time enough to take any paper he wanted. I saw you. It wasn't fair."
"Be a good sport, Tessie," Mrs. Delacroix said. And Mrs. Graves said, "All of us took the same chance."
"Shut up, Tessie," Bill Hutchinson said.
"Well, everyone," Mr. Summers said, "that was done pretty fast, and now we've got to be hurrying a little more to get done in time." He consulted his next list. "Bill," he said, "you draw for the Hutchinson family. You got any other households in the Hutchinsons?"
"There's Don and Eva," Mrs. Hutchinson yelled. "Make them take their chance."
"Daughters draw with their husbands' families, Tessie," Mr. Summers said gently. "You know that as well as everyone else."
"It wasn't fair," Tessie said.
"I guess not, Joe," Bill Hutchinson said regretfully. "My daughter draws with her husband's family. That's only fair, and I've got no other family except the kids."
"Then, as far as drawing for families is concerned, it's you," Mr. Summers said in explanation. "And as far as drawing for households is concerned, that's you too, right?"
"Right," Bill Hutchinson said.
"How many kids, Bill?" Mr. Summers asked formally.
"3, Bill Hutchinson said.
There's Bill, Junior, and Nancy, and little Dave, and Tessie and me.
All right then, Mr. Summers said. Harry, you got their tickets back?
Mr. Graves nodded and held up the slips of paper. Put them in a box then, Mr. Summers directed. Take Bill's and put it in.
I think we ought to start over, Mrs. Hutchinson said as quietly as she could. I tell you it wasn't fair. You didn't give him enough time to choose. Everybody saw that.
Mr. Graves had selected the five slips and put them in the box, and he dropped all the papers but those onto the ground, where the breeze caught them and lifted them off.
Listen, everybody, Mrs. Hutchinson was saying to the people around her.
Ready, Bill? Mr. Summers asked, and Bill Hutchinson, with one quick glance around at his wife and children, nodded.
Remember, Mr. Summers said, take the slips and keep them folded until each person has taken one. Harry, you help little Dave. Mr. Graves took the hand of the little boy who came willingly with him up to the box. Take a paper out of the box, Davy, Mr. Summers said. Davy put his hand into the box and laughed. Take just one paper, Mr. Summers said. Harry, you hold it for him. Mr. Graves took the child's hand and removed the folded paper from the tight fist and held it while little Dave stood next to him and looked up at him wonderingly.
Nancy next, Mr. Summers said. Nancy was 12, and her school friends breathed heavily as she went forwards, switching her skirt and took a slip daintily from the box. Bill Jr., Mr. Summers said, and Billy, his face red and his feet overlarge, nearly knocked the box over as he got a paper out. Tessie, Mr. Summers said. She hesitated for a minute, looking around defiantly, and then set her lips and went up to the box. She snatched a paper out and held it behind her.
Bill, Mr. Summers said, and Bill Hutchinson reached into the box and felt around, bringing his hand out at last with the slip of paper in it.
The crowd was quiet. A girl whispered, I hope it's not Nancy, and the sound of the whisper reached the edges of the crowd.
It's not the way it used to be, Old Man Warner said clearly. People ain't the way they used to be.
All right, Mr. Summers said. Open the papers. Harry, you open little Dave's.
Mr. Graves opened the slip of paper, and there was a general sigh through the crowd as he held it up, and everybody could see that it was blank. Nancy and Bill Jr. opened theirs at the same time, and both beamed and laughed, turning around to the crowd and holding their slips of paper above their heads.
Tessie, Mr. Summers said. There was a pause, and then Mr. Summers looked at Bill Hutchinson, and Bill unfolded his paper and showed it. It was blank.
It's Tessie, Mr. Summers said, and his voice was hushed. Show us her paper, Bill.
Bill Hutchinson went over to his wife and forced a slip of paper out of her hand. It had a black spot on it, the black spot Mr. Summers had made the night before with the heavy pencil in the coal company office. Bill Hutchinson held it up, and there was a stir in the crowd.
All right, folks, Mr. Summers said, let's finish quickly.
Although the villagers had forgotten the ritual and lost the original black box, they still remembered to use stones. The pile of stones the boys had made earlier was ready. There were stones on the ground with the blowing scraps of paper that had come out of the box. Delacroix selected a stone so large she had to pick it up with both hands and turned to Mrs. Dunbar. Come on, she said. Hurry up.
Mr. Dunbar had small stones in both hands, and she said, gasping for breath, I can't run at all. You'll have to go ahead and I'll catch up with you.
The children had stones already, and someone gave little Davy Hutchinson a few pebbles.
Tessie Hutchinson was in the center of a cleared space by now, and she held her hands out desperately as the villagers moved in on her. It isn't fair, she said. A stone hit her on the side of the head. Old Man Warner was saying, come on, come on, everyone. Steve Adams was in the middle of the crowd of villagers with Mrs. Graves beside him.
It isn't fair. It isn't right, Mrs. Hutchinson screamed, and then they were upon her.
Wow. Wow. Well,
that was The Lottery by Shirley Jackson, written in 1948. Yeah. And we thought it was fitting for this
spooky,
misty post-Halloween night.
That was a lot longer than we expected it to be, too.
Yeah, but sorry if it was a little disturbing for some people, but definitely has a big twist at the end.
Yeah.
But there's definitely some foreshadowing in the beginning with all the boys collecting stones. You're like, wonder what that could be for.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's a lottery.
Oh.
Ooh, wonder what that could be. But yeah, we hope you all enjoyed something a little different. Sorry about our coughing. reading for 20 minutes. We'll do that.
Yeah. We'll play you out with one more song. It's a song that I said we had to play today. And it is called, dun, dun, dun. Where is it? Oh, The Distance.
All right, here we go with the Distance.
Time, the green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone. All alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and biting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance. Shaking earthquakes of doubt and remorse assail him, impale him with monster truck force. In his mind, he's still driving, still making the grade. She's hoping in time that her memories will fade. Cause he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. The sun has gone down and the moon.